Hello, and welcome to the Safety 2023 podcast, presented by IOSH and recorded live at the 23rd World Congress on Safety and Health at Work in Sydney, Australia. In this series, we'll give you exclusive access to interviews with experts from around the globe to cover some of the biggest challenges and trends in occupational health and safety. Hi, you've tuned in to the Safety 2023 podcast presented by IOSH, and you're with me, Kelly Williams. I'm currently in Sydney, Australia, presenting this series as part of the 23rd World Congress on Safety and Health at Work. I'm very pleased to welcome our next brilliant guest. She is an injury management specialist from iCare New South Wales. A big welcome to you, Emily McGill. Emily, it's lovely to have you here with us. We're in a glass booth in the middle of the exhibition hall at the 23rd World Congress on Safety and Health at Work. Have you enjoyed the Congress, and have you had any highlights or takeaways?
I have. It's been absolutely amazing. The atmosphere is amazing, just being able to walk around and see all the presentations and everything. I think one of the highlights for me was, I think it was on Tuesday, there was a forum where injured workers were telling their story. And there was also some family members of people who died at work. And I just think that's why we're here. Mm. They're the people that we're here to help. And it's so important that we listen to what they have to say.
Absolutely. It's a shame I missed that one. What do you think has been one of the best things about interacting with, I guess, the international cohort of OSH workers here at Congress?
I think it's really been great to gain insights from the globe, to see what other countries are doing. Australia is very multicultural, so it's really good to sort of hear the challenges that they're facing and how they're overcoming them.
Yeah.
But what struck me is everybody's sense of curiosity. Everyone really is keen to sort of learn how we can do things better and how we can support people at work. And I love that.
Mm. There's been a real feeling of collaboration here at this event, hasn't there?
There has. Yeah, there really has.
Yeah. So I'm keen to hear a little bit more about you and how you fit into the occupational health and safety picture. So for the listeners, what is iCare?
So at iCare, we provide insurance and care services to the people, communities and businesses of New South Wales. So that includes things like workers' compensation, insuring the people who work in New South Wales, and care schemes like dust diseases, so people who've been affected by asbestosis and other dust diseases. It also includes insuring buildings and like sort of government assets like the Sydney Opera House or the Harbour Bridge, which you might have seen when you're walking around.
Yeah. So what's your role at iCare and what's your focus?
Yeah, so I'm a injury management specialist and I work in a primary psychological injury team. So we just manage psychological claims and we've been set up to test and learn the best way to do that, how best we can support people with a psychological injury. So my role is to provide guidance to the team on everything injury management and rehabilitation.
So it's not just, so it is physical injuries and the psychological impact of that, but it can also be psychosocial injury as well. Is that right?
Absolutely. So we do both, but the team I'm in is just primary psychological injuries. Yeah.
So your focus, your work really focuses on a really interesting area of rehabilitation and return to work, being psychological injury. For the listeners, can you give us a bit of a differentiation between psychological injury and other terms like so-called psychosocial risk and mental health?
So when we talk about psychological injury within the workers' compensation scheme, it's somebody who has lodged a workers' compensation claim, they've attended a doctor, they've got a certificate, and they've been diagnosed with a psychological illness that's happened as a result of work. When we talk about psychosocial risk, we're talking about anything, any risk factor that can lead to psychological harm. So it might be things like bullying and harassment, burnout, interpersonal conflicts within the workplace, anything that really sort of contributes to somebody developing an injury, psychological injury in the workplace.
Can it be factors outside the work as well?
It could be, although it wouldn't be something that you would generally sort of lodge a workers' compensation claim for.
So to set the scene, in New South Wales, what are the stats of someone returning to work with a psychological injury versus a physical injury? And are there big differences in rehabilitation time when comparing the two?
That's a really good question. It's actually 3 times longer.
Wow. And
on average, to recover from a psychological injury than a physical injury. And it's why it's so important that it's a focus and we need to sort of work out the best way to do it. We're also finding that the number of claims that are being received is increasing. Mm-hmm. So over the past decade, it's almost doubled.
Really? And has it increased since the pandemic?
I don't have the exact stats on that. I think,
quite likely.
Yeah.
So what are the traditional challenges of someone set to return to work with a physical injury?
So a physical injury can vary greatly. It could be something really significant or it could be like a soft tissue injury. But when the challenges around that tend to be whether we can find duties at work for them to recover at work, so whether we can find suitable duties for them to do, it tends to be sort of those more laborious roles that can be really challenging to help people recover from.
And you're just working really closely with the employer to...
Yeah.
And so by comparison, what unique challenges do we see someone with a psychological injury facing?
So restrictions on a psychological claim are much more complex.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And you can't see it. You can't work out by looking at someone what's going to work. So that's why it's really important that we're taking a person-centered approach to the recovery. We're keeping the injured worker at the focus of what we're doing. We're speaking to them about what they need, how they're going, working with them to set goals that they need to achieve, and working with them to work out how best to do that.
And I guess making them feel like you're on their side.
Right.
Yeah, because it's a really emotive area of work health, isn't it?
It definitely is, yeah.
So psychological safety and psychosocial hazards, they are hot topics of interest for a lot of businesses the world over, as I said, particularly post-pandemic. What are some of the common situations we see where people are sustaining psychological injury either at work or outside work?
So the most common one we see is bullying and harassment, followed by work pressure. So those two combined make up almost 70% of the claims we receive. So things like trauma, exposure to violence are much lower, like less than sort of 10%, which really sort of highlights how much of a focus we need to have on those psychosocial risks and looking at what we can do in the workplace to reduce the risk of these interpersonal conflict claims and the lack of support that the workers are feeling.
Absolutely. So when setting a return to work plan for someone with a psychological injury, what are the crucial considerations that need to be made?
I think it's definitely about having that conversation with them, keeping them at the center of everything that we're doing and engaging them in conversations about the return to work plan. So we've discovered that if the return to work goal needs to change, so if they're not going to go back to the same employer, they need to find a new employer, the earlier we work that out, the earlier we can help them get back to work. So it's really about giving them all the information about the support we can provide to help them either get back to their same employer or their different employer, and then asking them which pathway they wish to choose.
So a big part of this is balancing the approach, and that makes it so successful, but it's also beneficial for both the worker and the employer. So what does the ideal situation look like on return to work?
The ideal situation would be reported through to us much, much earlier. So we often don't see it until the person stopped working.
Okay.
Where I would say if, as an employer, you have an injured worker telling you that something's upsetting them in the workplace and there's mention of stress and things like that, that it's a really good idea to have it conversation with your claim service provider. The earlier that we get it, and then we're able to organise support. So it might be like a mediation, an independent person to come in and sit down and speak to both parties. The ideal situation would be an injured worker and an employer who are really open to sitting down and having a discussion with each other about how they got there into that situation and how they can work together to resolve it.
So early intervention is key, and you're going to have better outcomes, aren't you? Much Definitely. More successful outcomes. So when a person is returning to work with a psychological injury, what can be done to reduce the risk of aggravating that condition to ensure a safe and durable return to work?
So I think it's really important to take a trauma-informed approach. So really have an understanding of what trauma can do to affect how a person is interacting with you and how you can adapt what you're doing to accommodate that. So, for example, making sure that if someone's been through something really traumatic, we don't ask them to give us details about that and then employ like a rehabilitation provider or another service provider, and then they go and ask them to repeat it again. And then we get to a situation where 6 months down the track, they've been recounting it every week. It's just
That's not helpful.
No, we want them focused on recovery. Mm. So it's really important that if you're dealing with someone who's been through trauma, you have an understanding of that effect and you can work to sort of avoid triggers.
I think that's a fantastic point. So can you tell us a bit about how iCare is approaching return to work?
So like I said, just that trauma-informed approach and keeping that at the top of our minds at all times, and providing injured workers with choice wherever possible. So not dictating the return to work process to them, but engaging them in a conversation about how we can support them to return to work. We're organising early referral to a rehabilitation provider to provide that support as well, and reviewing that return to work goal as soon as possible. So really sort of engaging them in a conversation about what they want to achieve and how we can support them to achieve that.
I really like the idea of mediation, because both the employer and the employee are going to trust that kind of middle service. Yeah, absolutely. So what's the importance of setting the right goals at the right time? Do those goals shift throughout an individual's plan?
If we are trying to impose a goal on an injured worker, it's not going to work. Mm. We really need to be developing it in collaboration with them and checking in with them how it's going, because that's going to change as we're going through the process. We spoke about mediation. So if they start to have that mediation and it's not going well, and they sort of review their situation and don't believe that goal's going to work and they want to change to new employer, we need to be aware of that. Also, sometimes especially when we first get a claim through, someone might be too symptomatic to talk about return to work.
That's a really good point.
So it's really then about working with them to set goals around their activities of daily living. How can we support them to improve their like functional capacities in their activities of daily living for things that are important to them?
And every trauma is individual at the end of the day. And one thing doesn't, what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for the other.
And we can't see it.
No.
So we can't, it's not like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
The only way we're going to be able to work out how best to support that person is to talk to them about it.
So do you have any examples that you can share of what this looks like in practice?
Absolutely. So we had an injured worker who had experienced bullying and harassment in the workplace. And she was very symptomatic when we first received the claim, experiencing suicidal ideation and things like that, terrified to leave the house, worried that she was going to run into somebody in the workplace, wasn't ready to discuss a return to work goal or move towards sort of any activities around return to work. So our wonderful case manager had a conversation with her about what other kinds of things she might like to work on. Now, she was really keen to return back to swimming. It was something that she did prior to the injury and really wanted to get back to it. So the case manager developed a plan around that and organized support for her to start getting her to the pool, having someone going with her to do that. Then she transitioned to do it sort of independently. Mm. But in doing that, she was getting out of the house. And that's the first step to Absolutely. Returning yeah, to work.
Yeah.
So, you know, within 6 months, she was fit to go back to work.
That's and amazing.
Managed to sort of
It just goes to show, job. Doesn't it? Something that you think is completely not related whatsoever can have such a positive impact. And I guess it's a trickle effect, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
And it's not like a physical injury where you can see it. So we really need to help people to develop capacity within their own lives.
Mm, absolutely. So for you personally, you and your co-workers are dealing with some very heavy cases, very heavy situations. How do you and your team ensure that your own psychological safety with these caseloads, how do you, you know, keep a check on that?
I think it's really important that we turn off our laptops at the end yeah. of the day, have that work-life balance, spend time with my family and be present when I do. I love the gym. I love weightlifting. That's sort of
awesome.
That really helps me with relaxing. We create lots of opportunities for the team to debrief so that they have support. And also it's so important that you're involving the team in conversations about the procedures and practices and everything that they're doing. So you're getting the insight of what is potentially problematic for them, and then you can sort of adjust it as you go along.
And I guess sharing the load as well.
Yeah, definitely. And sort of being really in tune with the team and listening out for conversations that they're having that might be difficult and checking in. And
so on the other side of the coin, what does it mean to you to be able to support workers to get back to work? It must be a really rewarding job when that happens.
It definitely is. I've been working in the workers' compensation industry for over 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And when I first started, I really wanted to support people with a psychological injury. So I went to uni and sort of studied part-time, and I'm just really honoured to be able to be in a position where we're trying to find the best way to support someone to make people's lives better. I love that.
Excellent. So from all that you've said, what do you hope that people watching and listening to this podcast from other countries can take away to apply in their own contexts?
I think the first thing is that a trauma-centered, trauma-informed approach is really important. Mm. Firstly, we need to make sure we're not inadvertently doing any harm to the injured worker.
Absolutely.
And I think the second is psychological injuries are complex. Mm-hmm. You really need to put the person at the center of everything you're doing, build that rapport with them and have discussions with them about how you can support them to achieve the goals.
Emily, it's been wonderful to have you come in and share your expertise on such an interesting topic in the world of OSH. So thank you very much. If you're watching this back on the World Congress platform, you can watch other recorded episodes right now. From everyone here at IOSH and the 23rd World Congress on Safety and Health at Work, thanks so much for listening, and we look forward to sharing more conversations from the world of OSH with you very soon.